Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Jacob Darbyshire from Iowa. He shot a 254-inch Iowa giant with his bow last year, and today we're going to tell his story. Jacob is a farmer and has some pretty good ground to hunt, but by no means is he a huge land manager or anything like that. It's a pretty cool story, and we're going to tell it today. But before we tell his story, I'd like to thank my sponsors, my title sponsor, Redneck Blinds. If you're in the market for a blind, we're heading into spring here. Check out their fiberglass blinds. They also make some great soft-sided blinds. My favorite soft-sided blind is their ghillie blind. Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. If you're into filming your hunt or filming others, check out Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. They also make the Final Rest shooting system, which is a shooting rest that can be used in blinds. It can also be used to run and gun. A lot of predator hunters are finding out how awesome it is. It can actually be folded up and put in a backpack. Wind Scent, makers of vapor deer scent technology. The unit actually vaporizes deer urine, and it's been tested, and it travels several hundred yards versus just pouring it on the ground. Morel Targets, makers of the high roller target. Huntworth Gear, they make some great clothing. Check out huntworthgear.com. You don't have to spend it all to get it all, is their motto. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vane. Also going to talk about Lucky Buck today on the podcast with Jacob. He was using Lucky Buck. They're also a sponsor of the show. So now's a great time to get Lucky Buck on the ground. LuckyBuckMineral.com. Grim Reaper Broadheads. They make some great mechanical as well as fixed blade broadheads. Schaefer Performance Archery. If you're into shooting high-speed bows, and most of us are, they make an arrow rest called the XV that was designed to handle arrow speeds exceeding 400 feet per second. Illinois Connection Outfitters in Pike County, Illinois. They manage over 16,000 acres in Pike County. The Outdoorsmans, they make great tripods and backpacks for hunters. If you're into glassing fields and you need a portable tripod for that, Outdoorsmans makes a great system. They also have backpacks for Western hunters and whitetail hunters alike. Last but not least, Wilderness Athlete. They make some amazing nutritional products. My favorite is Hydrate and Recover. If you're tired of drinking sugary drinks and putting on lots of weight, check out wildernessathlete.com. Enter DROP10 at checkout, and you can actually get a discount on your order. Now let's go ahead and cut to the interview here. Welcome to the podcast, Jacob. How are you today?
Doing well, and yourself?
Oh, pretty good. You know, we're all trying to stay inside or stay away from the boogie bed, I guess, with the coronavirus. Being a farmer, you don't have to do that. You get to get outside. Are you planting crops this time of year or getting ready to?
Getting ready to. Not yet. Just starting to get equipment ready and waiting for the weather to fully decide to change to being nice and where we can get out in the field and start doing something.
So you're blessed to live in the grand whitetail state of Iowa.
Yes, I am.
And you killed a monster last year, gross 254. That's an amazing buck. Did he have a nickname?
Yes, I named him Major League.
Major League, yeah, I guess that's fitting.
Yeah, I thought so. So been waiting for the right deer to use it on, and I figured he was the right one, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So 254 inches. I haven't even seen a picture of him yet. Was he a typical, non-typical? What would you describe him as?
Very non-typical. Very non-typical. He's got him going every direction. So,
how many scoreable points does he have?
Scoreable, I think there was like 24 or 25 or somewhere in there, and had another 4 or 5 extra that we ended up not being able to score. So I would say, I don't remember for sure exactly, but it was right in that 23, 24 range, I believe. Yes.
Okay. So you figure he was 5.5 years old when you shot him.
Yep.
4.5 when you started seeing pictures of him. What time of year did you get the first picture?
Would have been October. I've been about first of October, first of the hunting season in 2019 or 18, 2018, sorry. Started getting some pictures of a, at that time was just a deer that was a lot bigger than the rest of them. He kind of just, I don't know if he was around or if he showed up and then decided to stay there and make that home or what, but I'd never had any really previous history with this deer and started getting a lot of pictures and kind of goes on from there, I guess. So,
how often were you getting a picture of him and were you getting a good look at his rack, you know, in the pictures?
Yeah, he was really nocturnal in 2018, for whatever reason. A lot of nighttime pictures. I may have only had a handful of daytime pictures. But mostly at night, late at night, 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. And was getting quite frequently, in a couple of different areas. But not enough to where I hunted him in 2018, but not near like I hunted him this year because I was getting him more consistently and he was kind of staying in a one little isolated area. So hunted him a lot harder in 2019 than what I did in 18. So had some other deer I was hunting in 2018 as well. So yeah.
when you first got a picture of him in 18, did you realize, man, he's a whopper?
Yeah, he was a stud. He was definitely a stud. A bunch of my hunting buddies and actually the kid that officially scored him is a close friend of mine and we even went back to his 2018 pictures and we have him guessed that, you know, he was a 200 inch deer in 2018. He wasn't near 254 or anywhere near that. We had him guessed in the low 200s, you know, 210, somewhere in there, you know, maybe 215 at the most. But yeah, so he was definitely a stud and definitely caught my attention, that's for sure. And like I said, I hunted him a little bit, but not near like I did this year. So
in 2019, you can assume he kind of shrunk his core area.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, you know, you got 100-plus acre farm, you're hunting there. How big do you think his core area was? I mean, was he showing up every single day?
No, he was not. It was a weird little story, I guess. So August of 2019 comes around and I'm getting a lot of, you know, velvet pictures of him, and he's pretty frequent still, a lot of at night, you know, nocturnal, going back and forth from feeding. And then so August goes by, and then actually September comes around and he basically vanished and disappeared on me. And I didn't have him on trail camera for all of September in the first 2 weeks of October. So he really shrunk his core area for whatever reason it was. And so later, the second week, it would be the start of the third week of October, I moved some camera, bought a new camera and moved a few other ones and left the ones where he was, was on them previously. And then set a few other ones in an area where I really hadn't had any. And sure enough, that, you know, a week or 2 weeks later when I checked him, he was all over that camera. So he was really keeping in a very confined area, I guess you could call it. And it was probably, I have a guess, maybe a 300 by 300 yard, basically square block that he was, staying, living in the north, northeast corner of my property. So he became very home range territorial, I guess is what you want to call it. So, yeah.
Sure. Now, what was he doing for food, do you think?
He was headed to a bean field that was, would have been on the east end of the property. And then there was there's a cornfield on the north end, on the northeast corner. So he was going to them too. There was a creek that runs right in between where I have figured he was bedding and living. And then he was just, he had water right there and he had food within 200-300 yards, if that. And he was just hanging out and he wasn't doing anything. So, like I said, the cameras that he was on all of August and at the end of July and all of August, I left and he was never on them cameras. And then I moved one into this area where I eventually found him and he was all over that one camera, but was not on any of the other ones. So he had really shrunk his home range. So. Pretty wild. Pretty weird, I guess.
Yeah, you know, but it's consistent with all the experts, if you want to call them that, that I've interviewed over the years, be it Bill Winky or Lee and Tiffany or whoever, Michael Waddell, everyone says, you know, small area, small area, small area for these old bucks. So he kind of fits that profile. Yeah,
it definitely does. And like you said, I've listened to a bunch of YouTube videos and followed all them people that you named. And it seems like, you know, a lot of the big deer that get taken within the United States, you know, it is, they live in a very small area. So, so I knew that he was still kind of hanging around, but I had to more and less go find him and kind of be pretty bold, you know, get pretty bold with my strategy. And I was afraid I was going to bump him around and do something. And, but, thankfully didn't, and kind of found him again. And, the rest is history, I guess.
So let's describe, you mentioned you had to get bold. Once you had fresh pictures, what was your approach? How many stands did you put up? Were you hunting just one stand, or, I mean, what did you do?
Yeah. So, I did not, like I said, I didn't have a trail camera in the area I found him in, nor did I have a stand, because I didn't have, in my 160 acres that I hunt, I didn't have a deer in this ever in the years past have a deer in this kind of section of the property that I really wanted to hunt. So I didn't have anything up in this corner of the property. So, like I said, I went and bought a new camera, and then eventually went, and when I got them pictures of him on, it'd been the week of October 29th, or it'd been the week before, I guess. I shot him on October 29th. So it'd been 7 days ahead of that when I pulled the card, and he was all over the camera, three or four or five days in a row at the same exact time. It would have been 4:40 in the afternoon. He was going by the camera. So the day of the 29th, rolls around, and I got the right wind, the wind that I needed. I thought I needed to hunt him, and, actually drove down to the local farm store and bought a brand new stand and climbing sticks, and, had a good buddy of mine named Brian Bacchus, a good hunting friend. I asked him if he'd take off work for me, and we went in there at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I set up a brand new set, and 3.5 hours later, he come by and I harvested him. So, got really bold and pretty aggressive, but, it was time to do it. So, like I said, I had him on camera three or four, 5 days in a row there at 4:40. So I figured it was time when I got the right wind.
So you literally only hunted him one time?
I had hunted him, out of different stands. But in that stand, I hunted him one time. I hunted him that night and that afternoon, and I shot him. But I have some stands that, like I said, I was so afraid that this deer was, you know, you don't want a deer of this magnitude. I was so afraid of bumping him. I didn't want to bump him off the property or, you know, do something to screw up. So I was hunting him kind of on the edges, I guess you could call it, and trying to really stay out of what I thought was his home range. At that time, I thought it was a much bigger area. And then I had another deer that I was hunting and kind of was excited about. So I was hunting that other deer because I wasn't getting pictures of him in September or the first part of October. So my thought process was, there's no sense in hunting a deer that's not there. So then when I got that, other trail camera set up, and then eventually got pictures of him, I obviously switched my attention back to that deer because he was much bigger than the other deer I was hunting. But I had only hunted him probably a handful of times this year, and really one, just basically 4 hours, if you want to call it. Basically hunted him 4 hours this fall, and it worked out for me. So
4 hours in that stand. I mean, were you totally expecting you'd get your shot based on what your trail camera was telling you?
I was not. No, I mean, I wasn't. Like I said, a friend of mine got to come off work, and we went in there and set up a stand, and we spent a lot more time in there than what I would wanted it to. But the process took a lot longer. Yeah, we were hoping to only be in there about 30 to 40 minutes, and we ended up being in there a little over an hour. We couldn't find the tree that I needed, so I was very optimistic on what was going to happen when I eventually got set up. And I didn't see a single deer, another deer that night. He was the only deer I saw. So I'm sitting there. I finally get set up and sitting there, and 3 hours go by, and the 4:40 time comes by, and he never showed. So I became very disappointed and thought maybe I had dumped him out. And actually, it would have been another hour went by and he showed up. So, trail cameras were, the last podcast I've done another one. And like them guys said, you know, technology kind of can hurt you in that way a little bit where, you know, I was almost kind of expecting or hoping he was going to show up at 4:40, like the camera had said, and he never did. So I got really disappointed. And then, within an hour, I was the happiest I've ever been in my life. So
that's amazing. Now, one of the sponsors of this podcast is Lucky Buck. That's how I got connected with you. Is Lucky Buck Mineral been part of your game plan for a long time? I mean, do you put it out every year?
I haven't fed it for a lot of years. I just have been started to feed it there the last few years. Probably, I don't know, the last 4 or 5 years, I'd say I'd started using it. And I use it, I guess I've used it more for, you know, it's like candy for them. So it's something I put in front of a trail camera and it seems to just really attract them. And you can get so much intel on a deer because it just seems like they just want to hang out around that, you know, that site. And then you can get so many trail camera pictures of them. But as far as like really using it for growth of a deer, you know, of course, yeah, everyone's doing that. But I didn't really know enough about the product to know what it would actually do to help the deer out as far as that goes. But I have used it. Yeah. And this major league had, I had used it on him and that's how I was getting a lot of trail camera pictures of him in the off season every year. And, you know, really trying to keep a tab on what he was doing and where he was at. I've used quite a bit of it. Maybe not as much as some people, but, I definitely have used it. Absolutely.
So how many inches did he grow from 18 to 19?
We're assuming over, like I said, we had him guessed in 2018 to be, you know, the low 200s, and he grows 254 this year. So we're, you know, 35, 40 inches. So okay. Is what we probably, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40 inches, I guess, is probably where we had kind of guessed he'd put on. So for the year.
Now describe that moment when you walk up on him, you know, did he end up being bigger than you thought, as big, you know, I mean, what were you thinking when you walked up?
It was an unbelievable, time. And I, that good friend of mine who helped me set up the stand, actually, I called him back and he come back to help me. And when I called him at, you know, 5:30, 6 o'clock, whatever time that was, and told him what had happened, of course, he didn't believe me. He thought I was joking around. And I'm like, I just shot this deer. And so I got him to actually come back and he had a lot of, time put in with me, obviously helped me set up that stand and whatnot, and then knew about the deer. And so I had him come back and wanted him to be kind of a part of it. And we both, start tracking this deer and ended up tracking him for a lot farther than what we would have liked, or I would have liked, I guess. He ended up going about 250, 300 yards. So, before he finally, crashed over, but we go walking across this open bean field and come up on the next property. And he had just jumped the fence into the next property and made it one step. And so we go walking up there, it's pitch dark and we're using spotlights and we reach over the fence to start, you know, keep tracking. One of us shined our lights and he was laying there and it was the most crazy time, in my life. It was unbelievable. It's so much bigger than what I would have ever expected. I mean, it was almost, I go running up to him and I fall down beside him and I didn't really touch him for the longest time just because it was just one of them deals. Like, what, you know, what the heck am I even looking at? Is this even real right now? So eventually grabbed a hold of him and tipped him up and he took a picture, and that picture that he took that night is the craziest picture I've ever seen. It was wild. That's for sure. We had a good celebration. That's for sure.
Was there tears in your eyes?
Just to the point where I was just so, I mean, I don't even know what to say, how I felt. It was just like, I couldn't believe what I was looking at type of deal. And that we had just set that stand up 4 hours previous and just the whole story, you know, and it was just, I wouldn't say I shed a tear, but I definitely was the happiest man on earth there. That's for darn sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So how soon, I mean, you probably green scored him pretty quick, but
yep, that night. Yep.
How soon did you realize, you know, this is the biggest buck taken in Iowa this year? I mean, that's significant.
Yeah, it, that night I ended up that good friend of mine, like I said, he went to the same high school as me. He's an official scorer. And, I ended up calling him that evening. And when we finally got the deer back to the farm and, you know, the family was all around and, I actually texted him and I was like, hey, would you want to come out and score a deer yet tonight? And then, you know, we're talking 8 o'clock now. And he's like, well, what'd you shoot? And I said, well, I shot a 200 inch deer. And he said, send me a picture. So I sent him a picture of him laying in the back of the truck. And within 10 seconds of it, that picture being delivered to his phone, he called me and said, I'm headed your direction.
So that's awesome.
He comes out and, he scored him right there in the back of the truck and ended up, his green gross was 259 that night. So immediately everyone is like getting on their phones and going to the Iowa DNR and seeing where he falls in line as far as, you know, record books go. And I had no idea, you know, I've hunted a long time, but you know, I had a pretty good idea that it was going to take a pretty big one to beat him that night, but I guess I would have never, I mean, it was still so early in the season too. So yeah. I mean, this is October 29th. There's still, you know, two and a half months of the season yet to go. So, it was very cool night, I guess, to say the least. And I didn't know where he would fall, but I knew it would take a pretty big one to beat him. So
where does he fall in the overall scheme of things for the state of Iowa?
For the state of Iowa, he falls, for bow, he's third all time. And, okay. For the state, like overall, because, he's fourth overall all time because the one that leads Iowa is actually shot by a shotgun. And then the next three are, taking archery. So he's third, I guess, if you want to call it by bow, and he's fourth overall. So,
wow. Wow.
Yeah. Pretty wild. Would have never guessed that would have ever happened or my name would ever be in the record books when I started hunting whitetails, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And just fortunate, you know, and blessed to be able to even hunt an animal of that magnitude and you know, to have one on trail camera, you know, is just crazy. And to be able to harvest him is just unbelievable and very blessed and very fortunate. So,
well, I'm living in the right place, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the king of whitetails, I guess you could call it, Iowa. I don't know about Kansas, has got big ones too, and Ohio and Indiana, but I enjoy living in Iowa and hunting Iowa whitetails, that's for sure.
Now, before this buck, what's the biggest buck you've taken?
2014. I hadn't shot a buck with my bow since 2014, and I think he was 152. I think.
Okay.
So
that brings up a good point that I try to ask people this question when I remember it, and you've created a perfect segue here. How did you handle making the shot? So it's been, you know, 4 or 5 years, and on top of that, you're shooting at a world-class deer. How did you deal with it?
A lot of practice. I had purchased a new Matthews, Tri-Ax, over the off season, and, it was time to update. I was still using the bow that my parents had bought me 10 years ago for my first bow. And I had outgrown it and it was time to get a new one. So I purchased a new Matthews and I don't even know how many arrows I had shot through that bow in the off season. You know, preparing, you know, for what I had hoped would be the opportunity at shooting at this deer, which it never, you can shoot in the backyard all you want, but what it's so, you know, when you got a 250 inch deer standing in front of you, there's nothing you can't prepare for that. But, so I just, you know, I was confident with, the yardage. Actually, it was, you know, I wouldn't call it a chip shot, but it was a 20 yard shot, 18 yard shot. And, I'd shot that shot so many times and would have never guessed that I had gotten that close to him for that shot, but I'd practiced at a lot longer distances. But I just put top pin on him and squeezed it like I would have in the backyard, I guess, and the heart was pumping, but I didn't want to screw up that opportunity. You don't get very many opportunities at deer like that.
So you weren't really shaking much?
What I tell people, I definitely was nervous, but what I tell people is he actually come in from behind me, and he was right there. I mean, he was, when I turned around, he was standing at 18 yards. So it was like I had to grab my bow right now, and he was going to take the trail to go up out and start feeding for the evening. And it happened so quickly that, you know, which I think was a good thing. And, you know, I'd much rather had that than what, you know, if he was feeding in the field and feeding closer and closer for 3 hours, you know, or for an hour, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to sit here and say I wasn't nervous, but it could have been a lot worse. I think just, you know, with it happening so fast, it was one of them deals where, you know, I had to grab my bow right now and, or he was going to be on the trail and up the hill and out of sight before I could even blink. So, I think that was very, that helps me quite a bit. That's for sure.
Do you know, was there anyone else hunting that deer?
Yeah. The neighbor, where he eventually actually, died, when we found him, there was a guy hunting that property, and there's a 100-acre bean field or crop field that separates my property and or the property I hunt and the property that he can hunt. So the deer was spending a lot of time on, he had hunted him the year before, and we had actually been talking, you know, we were communicating back and forth with the deer. He knew about him. I knew about him, obviously. And he was working both properties. And, I hadn't talked to him much this year, but, the deer was being hunted by the neighbor as well.
Yeah.
Okay. I believe he lived on my property, but he spent time, you know, feeding in the field and then headed over to that property. Is a lot of CRP. So, not as maybe good bedding as what I had, or, you know, where the deer wanted to get in and could really hide. And that's why he, I think, was living on my property, but spent time on both. That's for sure.
You have your eyes on any big ones for next year?
Yeah. I got, well, the deer that I was hunting this year, before I switched my, you know, before I switched my attention back over to Major League, when I got pictures of him, I was, you know, he's a really nice, 12 point that I was hunting and needs a couple more years probably, but it's so hard to let them get to where they need to be when there's so many people hunting on, you know, in the area, and you don't know where which property they're going to be on. So you try to, you know, take the opportunities when you can. But yeah, definitely I got a big deer that I'm going to be hunting this year. I don't think he won't even come close to what this one was, but definitely have a reason to be hunting.
Yeah, you'll probably never see one like him again in your life. That's for sure.
No, I hope so, but I don't think it probably will ever happen. But just like I said before, very blessed that I had the opportunity when I did.
You're obviously, you know, as far as this year, rock star status, Iowa Deer Classic and all those kind of things. Do you think it will actually put more pressure on your hunting area? Have you seen that or have you heard or talked to other people in similar situations, or it's just too privately held to have that happen?
It's pretty privately held. There's a section that, some other hunters could get pretty close and maybe be within a couple hundred yards or a half mile. But as far as my property that I can hunt on, that my distant family owns, it's pretty hard to get onto it. I don't know. You know, that's the downfall to shooting a big deer is, you know, people are going to, well, where'd you get that? And where'd you shoot that one? Well, I, you know, try to keep it as quiet as you
possibly can. In the woods.
Yeah. In the woods as every hunter would, you know, in the woods and, you know, I joke around and tell people, you know, where I live, it's all crop, you know, it's all crop fields. And so I just shot him in a grass waterway out in the middle of a crop field. And that's where I shot him. So, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Obviously it's definitely a concern that, you know, someone move in. I don't know. There's really no way they possibly could. Cause, like I said, my distant family owns it. No one else has permission. So, but definitely something to be concerned about when you shoot a deer this magnitude.
Mm-hmm. In closing, is there anything this deer taught you you know, that you think will kind of stick with you for killing big bucks in the future?
Persistent, I guess. Don't give up on an animal, you know, because when I lost pictures of him and there in September and in the first part of October, you know, I was really, as every hunter would be when you have a 200-inch deer on camera and they go missing, you know, and I got really disappointed, you know, and I stayed after him and almost got to the point where I was, you know, I was aggravated and kind of, you know, where the heck is this deer at? And he's still got to be on my property. And if he is, you know, where at? So I just stayed really persistent and just really, you know, just kept working hard to, you know, to try to find him and worked hard to try to keep him on my property in the off season. And, you know, do a lot of working in the timber and doing things to try to, you know, build the habitat the way that it needs to be. And just, I don't know, just stay persistent, I guess, and don't get frustrated. Yeah. If a deer comes off, you know, if a deer disappears, you know, the first thing that was going through my mind was, you know, did he get poached or did he get hit by a car, you know, which are all factors absolutely can happen. You mm-hmm. hope that they don't, but, I wanted to give up, you know, 'cause like I said, when you got a deer like that on camera of that magnitude and he all of a sudden just disappears, I mean, you really almost don't want to hunt anymore. And, I told myself he's still out there and go find him. And I did, and ended up being able to harvest him. So I just stayed really persistent and kept my nose to the grindstone and just kept working at it, I guess.
I wonder what made him leave. Was it food, do you think? I mean, what made him disappear?
I'm not sure, because the year before I had pictures of him all over the property. And, you know, I'm talking the whole 160 acres. I mean, he was on six or eight of my cameras and not just one. So I don't know what happened I don't know if it was in the off season or if he really got pressured by another hunter, you know, the previous year and got hunted really hard. And then I don't know. It could have been so many factors, but yeah, that's why I was so nervous to do what I did and make the bold move that I did. I was really nervous that I'd bump him and move him off the property or, you know, I'd just keep chasing this deer around the property. But, I'm not sure. I think he got hunted pretty hard the year before by the neighbor. And like I said, I hunted him too. So you get two hunters hunting one deer and moving a lot and doing a lot of this and that, hunting the deer. I don't know if he got very, nervous or, you know, I'm not sure. But he really shrunk his home range from 2018, 2019. But them big mature whitetails are so hard to try to understand. It's just really hard telling, I guess.
Was there acorns or anything for him to chew on besides the beans?
No, it's really not. It's horrible, nasty, thick brush, you know, timber in that section of the area, you know, where he was living. It is just an unbelievable, gnarly territory. That's why it was so crazy to me when I eventually walked up on him and found him and, you know, still to this day that he was living where he was living with what he had on his head, just because it's like, if I want to go in there, I got to crawl if I want to go in there. And the fact that he was living in this area. And
That's why, right?
That's why. Probably. That's why. Absolutely. That was why he was in there, because it was so thick, you know, multiple rows and just thorns and every whitetail's dream of a hiding spot is where he was at. And he had it all in one little section. He had a creek that ran right through the middle of the property there, or the section where he was at. And then he had crop field to his north and soybeans to his east. So he had every imaginable, you know, reason to be living in this section of the property he was living. So, I would assume that's why he was there.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations. It sounds like Dave Wheeler from Lucky Buck is having some replicas made of him. So that'll be awesome. And congratulations on killing the monster.
I really appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
Yep. Good luck farming this year.
Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. Take care. I appreciate everybody listening this week. Certainly life has been crazy for all of us with the coronavirus. And I just stress to everyone to just keep the faith. I'm a Christian man. I believe in Jesus, and he is certainly in control in these times. So thank you for listening, everybody out there. As a thank you, I'm going to go ahead and give away a bucket of Lucky Buck. Just go to my website, tracybreen.com, TracyBreen.com. shoot me an email, the first couple people to email me over the next few days, will get a bucket of Lucky Bucks shipped to their house. It's a great time to put it out. Until next time, I'd appreciate it if you guys could, excuse me, give me a Google review or a review on iTunes. I appreciate that. To learn more about me, visit my website, TRACYBREEN.com. Until next time, have a great day and God bless.